Hey there, thanks for tuning into the podcast, We're Just Talking About It. Your host for the show is Major Retired Jason Chris Houck. He's the author of an award-winning Modern English Quran Interpretation, and he speaks nationally about Islam. He holds a master's in Middle East Studies, he studied Dari and Arabic, and teaches Introduction to Islam courses at numerous institutions.
Hi, I'm Jason Houck. This is We're Just Talking About It. We're going to explore the myths and stereotypes in America that we've all heard since September 11th. Since that horrible tragedy, we have done a bad job in our country of explaining what Islam is, what Islam isn't, and helping to bridge the divide between Muslims and non-Muslims. Let's change that.
Hey guys, I'm Holly, the producer for We're Just Talking About It. And have you ever just wondered what the difference is between Sunni or Shia, or how to use Sharia law in a sentence? We are getting down to the bottom, to the basics of Islam 101 for the average American who just wants to learn how to talk about it. Hey there, welcome to episode number 9 of We're Just Talking About It. This week, we continue our conversation with Shireen Qudsi. If you haven't listened to episode number 8, we recommend you go back. You'll get an introduction of who Shireen is and the insight she has into being a Muslim woman growing up in America. And this week, we talked to her about what it's like to raise her son in America after 9/11. We also talk about the education system in our country, and we take on a deeper topic of female genital mutilation, or FGM, in other countries and what's being done to try and stop it.
Before we jump on to kind of what you're doing, so you have a son that you're now raising in America, and he's born after September 11th, and we know since September 11th, things have been harder for Muslims in America, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But how do you approach it? You know how your mom and dad raised you, and now you're an adult and you're raising your son. What's different? What's the same? How do you go about that?
It's funny, Jason. It's a funny question because he's 7 now, and 7 years ago we didn't obviously have the sort of tension, you know, the sort of heightened tension that we do now. I think it's even worse now than it was after 9/11 in terms of race and religion and whatnot. And so when he was being expected, I didn't want him to have a Muslim name. He has a Muslim middle name, but an American first name. And, you know, now I get questions from Muslims like, oh, you know, that's his identity. And I said, you know, that's his identity. Sure, it's in there. It's in the middle name. But his first name, I want him to have an easy time. I don't want him to have people question how to say his name. I sensed that things would get tougher in this country, and I really didn't want him to be burdened with that through his name. And I'm really glad I did that. He's on the autism spectrum, so for him, it means that he has a pretty significant verbal delay, and his personality is that of a complete lover. I mean, he's just the sweetest kid on earth, so that tomorrow, if he gets picked on, he's not going to know how to meaningfully defend himself. So why would I really cripple him with that burden of having to carry this legacy in a name?
I think that's probably of interest to a lot of people, especially non-Muslims in America, that you were thinking ahead, and you as a child thought a lot about your first name, and you're thinking about where the country is going, and you're looking at your son and just saying, you know what, we can still honor our tradition and our heritage, but I can give a more Americanized first name, and that might make life a little bit easier. And I'm with you. I think things have gotten more tense since September 11th, the way our country has talked about Islam and dealt with Muslim cultures and the Muslim people in America hasn't been trending the right way. So I just think that's interesting. The people who are giving you a hard time about choosing that name probably weren't thinking about it the way you are.
Yeah, and I think even the work that I do with reform or theology or whatever, I mean, these are very, very intense subjects. And I've chosen to take this on. He shouldn't have to. This is not, this is not his burden. It can be if he chooses to have it be his burden, but it's not something he needs to take on. And when we look at identity, when I say that, oh, he should have had a Muslim name, I mean, how do I impress that on a child? I would be completely against it. How do I tell a child who's born completely free from any sort of impression and is built to learn and to explore that, you're going to be born and you're going to be put in a cage, and this is the cage you're going to be. This is the identity you're going to have. I'd rather let him explore that identity. And I think the fact that he has that verbal delay is such a gift, because he's gotten the chance to sort of be immersed in his own world a little bit more. Even when we, so for example, right now I'm introducing the concept of God to him, and I use the example of the invisible friend from Peppa Pig, Leo the Lion, which all kids understand. There's something there, but it's not there. And so I use that, you know, I tell him God's like Leo the Lion, and we have a conversation with God every night. You know, we thank him, and we ask for what we want to ask for, and then we remember certain people, you know, certain children that I've met in my life or learned of that I really wish, you know, just are remembered in prayers at night, just so that they're not forgotten. And as he gets older, then we have a more evolved conversation as to, okay, what is God? Is it a he? Is it an it? Is it an intelligence? Is it an energy? What is it? But that to me is more meaningful than saying, okay, you're a Muslim and I need you to learn the Quran now. It needs to be a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to let him grow up and learn about religion as it makes sense to his brain.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I was going to say, I mean, it sounds like you've thought this through, which maybe other, you know, parents have not. Do you have advice as to kind of how to start or maybe tackle this? And you seem like you have a plan. What would be your advice to other parents who might be struggling?
Break the conveyor belt. We are all on some kind of conveyor belt. You know, we are born, we're told this is that, and we never stop to question, does this make sense? You know, I overheard a conversation that my mom was having earlier today, and so mind you, she'll never admit this to me, but I happen to overhear it. And she's speaking with her cousin and talking about how the girls today of this generation, myself and those younger, are able to think for ourselves and break the chains of cultural abuse. And sometimes that comes through the religion, not that it necessarily is a religion, but those things are very, very parallel, or they run across each other sometimes. We're able to break that cycle in a way that the other generation never had a chance to, simply because they didn't have the exposure or the privileges or access to information. And so the first thing that we need to really do as parents is break that conveyor belt for ourselves and then for our children. You know, why do I do what I do? Why do I believe what I believe? And why did that happen? How did it impact me? And how can I rearrange a sort of environment so it's more of an ecosystem rather than a conveyor belt?
Really, that's a good way of looking at it. I think that's a helpful way to think about it. Teaching your kids to think and to ask questions, you know, not to be disrespectful, but to be smart and to be intelligent about how they're approaching a subject.
Well, yeah, and I think, Jason, you were mentioning that a lot of people come to you for advice on how do you avoid radicalization? How do you protect your kids from radicalization? I think that comes back to day one. You know, if you from day one have taught your child to be independent and you have respected your child. So, for example, with my son, I won't even allow, you know, say my mom is watching him, I won't even allow my mom to, like, grab his baseball cap off his head without telling him she's going to do that and asking. You know, the very, very subtle ways that we show respect to people rather than just assuming we have control over who they are and what they are and, you know, even something as simple as what they wear. If we train our children, and train is a very negative word, I take that back, if we encourage our children to have curiosity and respect and, you know, healthy boundaries. So if we encourage our children to have healthy boundaries, to have curiosity, respect for themselves and their environment and others, and train them to be really original thinkers, critical thinkers. And there's ways to do that. There's ways to have conversations with children that build sort of a blueprint for a mind that thinks more critically. If we can do that with our kids, it is that much more difficult for someone to come along in 10, 15 years and radicalize them, because we've built the foundation they need to be healthy adults.
I think that's really, really great advice. And I think back on, you know, how I was raised, and just I always had that healthy amount of respect. I was taught to be independent, and when a situation did arise, I had kind of in the back of my mind, you know, what I was told. I could go to my dad. What would my dad say right now? And you can reference that, and you have knowledge, you have the confidence, you have the information to make the smart choice for you. And that really needs to start young. That's really interesting.
It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, that you can go back to your parents, because when you were saying that, it reminds me of how growing up, it was, and this is not just my family, this is a very sort of South Asian, Middle Eastern sort of thing, that we never had effect. It was very easy to fight in front of each other, for parents to fight in front of each other, or for everyone to fight with each other verbally. It's very passionate arguments. But we never showed affection. So I didn't really receive hugs and love in that sort of traditional way from my parents. And it didn't really have that relationship with them. So when you're, when you're sort of always culturally indoctrinated, and I say culture, it's not religion, when you're culturally indoctrinated to follow the rules, to never sort of break the sort of chain of command in the household, then it is so much easier for someone else to come along and pick up that sort of that chain of command. And, you go from following one person to following another person.
Right.
Whereas with my son, his only job right now is to really just experience how fully he is loved, and that's it.
Look at the world, think about it, get educated, learn to make his own decisions. What you're saying, when I give courses on counterterrorism policy, or we talk about things like that, radicalization always comes up. How do young folks get radicalized? And whatever their ideology is that they're willing to become a terrorist for. And there's the myth that everybody gets radicalized and joins groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda is uneducated and poor. I mean, we know that they can draw from any crowd, but I think it's that the education and the free thinking, like you're talking about, that you're not a follower, you're a thinker. You don't just take anybody's commands that are given. You actually think about what they're asking you to do, and you put that against what you've learned in life. And I think that education piece is important, that style of education.
Yeah, and I think that's relevant for America right now, too. If we look at where we are now, where we're going to be in 5, 10, 15, 20 years on this trajectory, God forbid, it's so important to even change our education system around here and now. These issues of, we can say radicalization, but these issues of children becoming, vessels of an idea or blueprints of another person's thinking.
Indoctrinated,
Exactly. It's very, very widespread. We see that in the education system in the way that, and I taught for 7 years before I got into marketing and before I got into reform, and so we see that happening in our education system, is that we're just told to, follow a sort of pattern rather than think creatively, break patterns, and so it's very dangerous. It's, if you want a healthy society, it starts with the child.
That's my motto. I do, wherever I teach, my motto has always been, I'm not going to teach you what to think, I'm going to teach you how to think. Because I'm never, once you leave the classroom, I can't help you with every answer, but I can tell you how to think about it, and that's the important part. And I think you're right. We need to push in that direction. It'd be better for a lot of different issues. But you mentioned education. I would just throw out there that there's a good article on Boko Haram and what's happening in part of the country where they're at, is that people are now pushing back. Boko Haram came out really standing against education and burning down schools and getting rid of what they deem to be Western secular ideas and burning textbooks and stealing the children and putting them in their militia and taking the girls as wives, trophies, basically. And now that country is, the women especially, are fighting back and saying, you know what? The answer to Boko Haram is education. That's how we stop their recruitment and their radicalization. We teach these kids to not fall for what they're selling. Set that long-term solution that we've all got to get our arms around.
Yeah, and Africa's really leading in that sense in a lot of ways, even on FGM, for example, the way that communities are tackling cultural, deeply rooted cultural practices, and they really are leading it, and I think we can learn from that. I think when we still think of Africa, we still have this very primitive idea, but when we look at the on-the-ground issues, they really are leading the way.
And you mentioned FGM. Do you want to just tell our listeners what that is and where that comes from?
Yeah, so FGM is female genital mutilation, and there's four different types, but it involves the clitoris and either, partial removal or removal of the hood or entire removal. Sometimes the more extreme versions include sewing up the vaginal hole until marriage. And so this 100%, this is not religion. This is culture. It's outside of Muslim communities, it's in Muslim communities, it's really, really widespread. in South Asia, Middle East, and Africa, the thing is that it's ridden sort of the wave of religion. So if you find it in Islam, you find it in fiqh, you find it, you know, in other non-verse scriptures. So it's not in the Quran, but it's in other sort of legal jurisprudence, other scholars that have come after the Quran. And so when we look at anything that's outside of the Quran, it's really nothing more than a suggestion or an interpretation, and that can easily be challenged. And it should be challenged, and it is being challenged. But when we look at elsewhere where it's embedded in the culture, where people believe that, you know, you're not pure unless this is removed, or, you know, a lot of times in Africa, for example, it's tied into the sort of economics, or it's tied into the social system. So, for example, if you're a girl and you haven't had it done, you haven't had your sort of FGM, or you haven't been cut, then you're socially excluded from the community. Studies show that FGM is actually it's a high economic incentive for the local community in terms of the gifts, the fee for the cutters, and so it's tied into the economics. So in Africa, in Kenya, and I think it was in Nigeria, I think it was mostly in Kenya to begin with, what they're doing is they're changing the culture through the crutches the culture, you know, really depends on. So, for example, when it comes to social status, the boys are speaking up and saying, we don't want our future wives cut. We want them to be able to experience joy. When it comes to the economic incentive, well, we need to replace the economic incentive. So if they're, you know, if the cutter isn't getting the fee, how else are we going to celebrate this so that someone is getting their economic income still? Or how can we replace this sort of system with something else? So you're not completely eradicating the thing itself, because it doesn't work that way. It's too tied into everything in that society. But you're building alternate systems and alternate structures.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, we could probably talk for hours on just that one issue. There are so many things tied to it. But again, I hear you say is a lot of this is education, and it's explaining that there are alternate things that can be done to make this less popular and less important in the culture. It's a matter of thinking those things through for each particular area.
Well, and it's interesting that they're not just like, okay, maybe this is wrong, maybe we should just do away with it. It's, okay, we'll get rid of it if we find a way to supplement it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's promising, too. It's room for negotiation, in that, you know, it's much easier to change something where you can change parts and build something new versus telling people, no, you can't do this, which is so unrealistic. If you tell someone, no, you can't do this, psychologist says they're going to want to do it even more.
Right. That's where we'll wrap it up this week for We're Just Talking About It. Please stay tuned. We have another episode coming up with Shireen where we discuss reform and a campaign to challenge hate and alienation, which she is leading right now.
Thanks for listening today. We're just talking about it. We are trying to get through a hard conversation. It's not easy to talk about other people's religions, but you just made the first step. Please join us again on the next episode.
And if you guys have any questions, we'd love to hear them. You can email us at WJTANC. We're just talking about it, North Carolina. That's WJTANC@gmail.com. And you can subscribe and please share with anybody that you think could benefit from these conversations, because we're just talking about it.
So thanks for listening. Go out there, keep talking, and be nice to each other.
Your host of the podcast, We're Just Talking About It, is Jason Chris Houck. He's a retired U.S. Army Foreign Area Officer and has spent over 20 years studying Islam. He holds a master's degree in Middle East Studies from the Naval Postgraduate School, and he is a Malone Fellow in Arab and Islamic Studies.
Your producer and co-host for this podcast, We're Just Talking About It, is Holly Fleck. She has a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism and spent 5 years in television news reporting. And she is genuinely interested in learning how to have a conversation about Islam as an American.